Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
On Monday morning, the Irish Times did publish this piece by Patsy McGarry, Consequences of Reign of Terror by Dominican Principal at Newbridge College in Newbridge, County Kildare. Obviously, many of our listeners will be interested in this story in particular. We've heard of other fee-paying schools in particular that have been affected by this over the past couple of weeks. Patsy McGarry is the religious affairs correspondent with that paper. He joins me now. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Ciarán.
Tell me about this man who attended the Dominican-run Newbridge College in Newbridge in the 1970s. He spoke to you.
The man's name, we were calling him Peter, and he contacted me the other day about what it was like in Newbridge College. He was a boarder there himself in the 1970s, and he described it as a reign of terror, but mainly at the hands of this particular man who was physically and sexually abusive boys. He would go into the infirmary and the dormitories at night time, interfering with them in various ways. He had a belt, he used to beat them quite regularly. And I mean, it was known among the boys, they didn't understand, the younger boys, what was happening. And themselves didn't have the language or the words to describe what was going on, but they just over time began to realize that this is not on, this is not, shouldn't be taking place. And in all these cases that I've discovered again and again, they didn't talk about it very much to other boys. And even boys who were aware that something was happening to individual kids, they didn't discuss it with them. And they certainly didn't discuss it with their parents. Because again, in those times, in the 1970s, you didn't talk about sex to your parents, or your parents didn't talk about sex to you. And again, the language was a problem. How could you describe what had happened to you? It was just beyond, if you like, the experience and the knowledge of most people at the time, except, Peter says, that teachers at the school had to be aware that this was going on, and that it really upset them that none of them did anything about it at the time. So, I mean, Mercer was there in the 1970s when he was there. In fact, he was principal when he was brought before the courts in Naas in 2005. But in that stage, as a younger teacher, he was quite a young man at that time in the 70s, and behaved rampantly is the only word to use. And the reign of terror is a phrase that Peter used. And I was looking back at the case and the reports in the case of 2005, and I see the judge who heard that case used the exact same phrase about what went on in Newbridge when Mercer was there. Reign of terror.
If I quote what Peter said, and anybody will just be heartbroken by this line, he said, "I knew two of the innocent victims who tragically lost their lives at middle age, and their families lost husbands, fathers. Such was the weight on their traumatised, guilt-ridden minds." Expand on what they mean there, Patsy, about guilt-ridden minds.
Well, I mean, this, again, that is not sadly unusual in these sort of cases. That boys who were abused in this context, a closed context where they couldn't go to anybody for help and just have to put up with it and take the abuse and try to just move on to the next day or the next occasion, are traumatised by it. They're often picked upon because either they're small or they're deemed to be no support, or they're in somehow way vulnerable. In other words, the abuser thinks and believes he's going to get away with abusing this kid. And often these young boys were themselves, apart from being deeply humiliated by the whole experience and deeply traumatised by it, were ashamed that they were picked. They were ashamed because of the sex involved, and they were ashamed because they were deemed to be vulnerable by the abuser. And that shame and abuse and the trauma as a consequence of it remained with these men, and it deeply affected their self-esteem for the remainder of their lives. Now, some developed various mechanisms to deal with it, moving on, burying it, whatever, resorting to drink or whatever addictions they did resort to, and often led extraordinarily difficult lives. I mean, I've talked to men, for instance, only in the past few days who have been abused in Black Rock College. They became utterly introverted, have led lives of great isolation, have very few friends, couldn't ever cultivate a proper relationship with a woman, or a man, I suppose, but couldn't have a normal, decent physical relationship, because every time it began to become intimate, they were reminded and what happened to them at the hand of their abuser in the respective boarding school. So the story of those two middle-aged men taking their own lives in this context is not at all unusual. It just underlines what a shocking thing it was, and that these guys did that and got away with it, and often got away with it in contexts where colleagues or their peers, as in other priests, were aware and did nothing.
Peter did go on to say, and you mentioned about the college's teaching staff at the time, this is a quote from him, knew what was going on but failed to act and stop the evil in its track. You mentioned in 2005, Mercer, he was 58 at the time, he pleaded guilty at Naas Circuit Criminal Court to 13 sample charges of indecent assault. That was between 1970 and 77. He had gone for treatment, Patsy, to the UK in 2003. What does that mean, treatment?
There are, we are never told who sent him or why he went, or did he go voluntarily? Because there was a centre in the UK called Stroud, run by the Order of the Paraclete, an American-based religious congregation, which dealt with priests who had addiction issues. And this became a centre in the UK, particularly, but there's one in New Mexico and the United States as well. It became a centre as well for treatment of priests who were abusing children. And it was treated as an addiction often. And they were sent for treatment. I mean, it happened particularly with some of the most notorious abusers of the Dublin Archdiocese. They were sent to the same centre for treatment, which was never successful. I mean, some of these guys have come back, they'd be quiet for a while, and they start abusing again. And that appears to have been the case with Mercer. But he was convicted in Naas District Court in 2005 of those, on the basis of those 13 sample charges. But he'd also been convicted in 2003 on the basis of the abuse of one boy in the college itself. And he had to finish there, as we know that he was subsequently convicted again in Cork of abusing a boy down there, because he had been involved with the Dominican-run summer school down in Cork. And he, for a while, was based in a church, in a parish in Cork City. And he abused his kids there as well. I mean, he has been laicized since. He's laicized 2017. The man is still alive, living in Dublin. We're not quite sure what his relationship with the Dominicans is now, or if he has anyone. But he's living apparently in an apartment somewhere in Dublin. We don't know who's financing it.
If you look back to 2003, he'd been sentenced to 6 months imprisonment in relation to the indecent assault of another boy. One person, 6 months. Many people would have questions over that. The sergeant in the case said the victims maintained the incidents had had a terrifying effect on them. Mercer had robbed them of their childhood, he said, their sexuality, their trust in people, and of course their religion. And the judge went on to say that with this reign of terror Mercer did conduct over this 7-year period, the reputation of the school had been considerably sullied by the activities. To go back to the school itself, and I was speaking last week on Kildare Focus, Patsy, to Maeve Lewis, the chief executive of 1 in 4, about the Spiritan Order. And I mentioned to her fee-paying schools how they hadn't been involved in scandals as much to date. It's a big change at the moment. You made a very good point to me a few minutes ago about how these boys at the time, because it was an all-boys boarding school, would have felt about telling their parents, who would have, in your words, scrimped and saved to make sure they had the best start educationally to their lives.
Yeah, I mean, people assume that because you went to a Black Rock or a Newbridge or a Belvedere College that you come from a very wealthy background. But that doesn't follow. Certainly some people, some boys did, but an awful lot of them did not. They were put in there by parents who were determined to give their sons the very best start in Irish life that they thought they could get in Ireland. And they were people generally of modest means. They saved everything that they could to make sure that their sons would have 6 years in these, generally 6 years in these schools. And today, I mean, in the past week, speaking to many of the men who have been abused in those colleges and schools, the one thing that I asked them, why has it taken so long for you to speak out? And I'm definitely less than accusation, because I was intrigued by the fact that whereas we know from the Ryan Report published in 2009 about children who were abused, and particularly boys who were abused in orphanages, residential schools for children, reformatories and industrial schools, and it was exposed then that the sexual abuse of boys in those institutions was endemic. Why should it be any different in a private boys' boarding school? So the delay was intriguing. And this thing, this point came out again and again that people, the men who are now middle-aged and older, still do not want their elderly parents to realise that they paid for their children in a context where the children were being abused and couldn't do anything about it. It would be too traumatic for the elderly parents now. That was one reason. It wasn't the whole story. There was also the question of shame, the shame that they were picked on, the shame of the abuse and its nature itself, and the abuse and the nature that such sexual abuse has and the implications it has for a man's sexuality. People say, oh, you're abused. Are you a man? Are you straight? Are you gay? This sort of thing. But that some of these men still wrestle with, indeed wrestle with, for the rest of their lives. Anybody who's been abused as a child carries it with them for the rest of their day.
The court did hear these assaults between 1970 and 77 took place at various locations in the school, Newbridge College, including the dormitories, Mercer's office, and then the infirmary, where students went when they were ill or sick. And I just want to ask you about Peter, Patsy. How has he coped in the years that followed? Did he reach out for help, would say, therapy?
Not that I know of. I mean, Peter seems to be one of these ones. A fortunate man who's quite strong, and though he was there himself in that period, 70 to 77, he came through it all right, but was aware of what was going on then, and certainly aware of some of the men who were being abused, and the men who still age attended in recent years. And he's very strong feelings about what went on there, but also very strong feelings about the fact that other teachers he believes were aware and did nothing, that the order itself was aware and did nothing to protect the children.
A spokesperson for the Irish Dominican province has said to yourself that if anybody who has ever been abused by a member of the Dominican Order can get in contact with them at any time, the email or the website is safeguardingoffice@dominicans.ie, and also report any matter to TUSLA, obviously the Child and Family Agency, and also the Gardaí.
People may be wary about going to the Dominicans, which is entirely understandable. My advice is that if you're abused or witnessed abuse in Newbridge or wherever else, go to the Gardaí, will become extraordinarily professional and very, very sympathetic in handling these cases, number one. And if you need counselling, I would recommend you talk to 114. They're an excellent, independently funded body with a tremendous track record over the last 20 years. But don't sit around. If you've been abused or aware of abuse, don't do nothing. That's why this problem persisted in Newbridge and other places.
And that 114 line, 01662 4070. Anyone listening needs more information, get in touch with us here at the station. 0458 98 999. Patsy McGarry there, religious affairs correspondent of the Irish Times, on that story from Monday in the Irish Times. You can still read it, it's up there, the title, Consequences of Reign of Terror by Dominican Principal at Newbridge College Recalled. Thank you so much, Patsy.
You're very welcome, Kira.
Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Just taking a look at traffic and travel around the county then this morning, and it's a little bit heavy on the N7 heading in towards Dublin around City West and Rathcoole, but it does clear up then after that. The N4 is moving well as far as Lucan and Liffey Valley. It then gets a little bit heavy there, and it's very busy on the M50 in both directions. I think Ben was telling you a little bit earlier that there was a collision there, and that's having a knock-on effect now both northbound and southbound on the M50. We'll keep an eye on that throughout the morning here on KFM. Let's go to local issues then, and on the line we have Fine Gael councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Councillor Brendan Weld. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, how is everybody?
Good, good. Some of the issues that you have been dealing with over the last while. First of all, you were looking to see if the council could provide a progress report on the taking in charge of Rath Avenue Estate in Prosperous.
This is something that I find strange. But anyway, we have to deal with it now again. I was convinced, and a lot of the people that I dealt with at the time were convinced that this estate had been taken in charge. It seems that it was never completed, and now what they're saying to us that the legacy team have completed investigator work on that avenue and have submitted to Irish Water an application. So this has all changed since I brought this up a number of years ago, because now we're dealing with Irish Water. So we have to wait now for a report from them, and then hopefully the development control team in Kildare County Council have assured me that once they get further advice from Irish Water, they will progress to take him to charge at Rat Avenue as quickly as possible.
All right, good stuff. If we go to Staples Town then, Brendan, you were looking for traffic calming at Staples Town National School. Any sign of that happening?
Well, again, I'm not happy here because this has been an ongoing issue for quite a number of years. And I've been looking for traffic calming, proper traffic calming. As, because if you're coming from the Minot direction and you pass St. Kevin's GEA, you come around a corner, you're at the church, on the left, on the right is the church, on the left is the school, and people that aren't familiar with the area don't even know there's a school there. And so what we have done is, we thought we would get funding last year first from the NTA from some other agency, but we didn't. So the engineer has visited the site, and he's assured me that we will put traffic calming measures in place. There may be not what we want at this stage, because we may need further funding first, but this will be kept on the agenda until we get a proper resolution.
Okay, that's to do with traffic calming. I believe there's possible traffic hazards around the entrance to Keynes Pass at Coyle Dove. Something to do with flooding there, Brendan?
Yes, there's ponding of water there, quite a substantial ponding of water. And what I've discovered now is that this, the entrance into Keynes Pass when it's flooding, originally this water was in soak holes. But the soak holes now are not sufficient for at the present time, and the council have to look for a proper outlet to take the water away from the entrance to Keynes Pass. And as we currently, the area engineer has assured me he will do everything in his power to resolve this issue.
All right, so finally then, before we let you go this morning, Brendan, any sign of the Slate River commencing cleaning there?
Well, the Slate River, if it continues, like what I've been advocating here is, the Slate River is quite a flat area, going all the way from Prosperous into Rattangan and into Robertstown. And locals have been on to me with grave concerns about it. And they're happy that they don't piecemeal work on it, which is fine. But this is a river that needs continuous maintenance. And I don't know how it's going to work out now, because part of the problem was that this is going through a huge bog area. And the locals used to tell me a lot of silt and turf mud from the bogs used to end up in the bed of the Slate River. Now, there are, I'm told by the fishery board, certain species of fish there, including crayfish. And they're very restrained. So as a result of that, the council are responsible for the cleaning of the Slate River, but they're very restricted when they can go in to clean the slate because of fish spawning. So, but they have assured me, and I will continue, and so my colleagues and other colleagues, councils in the area, have the same concerns. And we are going to continue to pursue this to keep that Slate River. But my argument is we need continuous maintenance on that river. It's, we need probably sections need to be cleaned every year because we are restricted when we can go in.
Okay, on those issues raised recently, that is Fine Gael councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Brendan Weld. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, Men's Aid have launched their annual report for 2021 showing contacts made to the Domestic Abuse Support Service for men and their families increased by 37% when compared to 2020. The launch yesterday was supported by Minister for Justice Helen McEntee and Detective Chief Superintendent Colm Nolan of the Garda National Protective Services Bureau at Men's Aid HQ in Navan in County Meath. And on the line is Chief Executive of Men's Aid, that's Katrina Bentley. Katrina, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Alan. Thanks a million.
So Men's Aid is the only dedicated domestic abuse support service for men in Ireland, responding to 7,561 contacts in 2021, a 37% increase, Katrina.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It was a busy year, 2021. The figures the previous year were about 5,500. So, and this year, we're indications look such that we'll probably support about approximately 10,000 contacts for 2022. So the demand is growing, and we're responding as best we can. We did sadly miss 630 of those calls just because we didn't have a staff member to answer the phone. So that's something we're very obviously eager to address for 2023. But I think overall, Owen, I think it's a positive because at least it says that men are picking up the phone and they are calling us in the strictest of confidence for information, support, validation, and most of all, first and foremost, is the listening ear to be validated.
Tell us a little bit about the breakdown here of the men that are contacting you. You deal with those age from 18 years of age to 80 plus, so there's no age limit here. What kind of phone calls are you getting?
Yeah, first and foremost, it's for the emotional and the psychological support, just to talk it out with somebody, because when somebody is verbally abusing you, you mightn't even see it for quite some time. When someone's calling you stupid, commenting on your weight, telling you that you're useless, picking at you, intimidating you, humiliating you, and perhaps you know gaslighting, you know, making you feel as if you're going crazy. I didn't say that. You did say that. I told you I'd pick you up on Sunday. No, you said you'd pick me up at 2. No, I used to pick you up at 4. What time did you pick the kids? This kind of thing. So when that's emotional and psychological, it's invisible, it can help just to talk through with somebody for you to understand is it what we would classify coercive control. So first and foremost, a lot of our call zone is that first kind of chat and that first contact. And no doubt some of the men are ringing the landline, the phone number and hanging up because it takes a lot of courage as well to call us. So that's kind of first and foremost. Then if a relationship is breaking up and things are not good, it's the practical information is the second thing, whether legal orders are required, protection orders, safety orders, interim barring orders, that sort of thing. If there's violence and if it needs to go down a legal route, are they looking at the justice system? And then I think that the third is around safety, because for men, they have nowhere to go. There's no refuge in Ireland as of yet. So they're looking at the safety for themselves, safety for the children, in terms of just the level of violence, certainly this year. But for last year, they were the three time kind of top. The top three top issues would have been the emotional listening, the practical information and the safety.
43% of calls came from the Dublin region, followed by the Northeast, then in Galway or the west of Ireland. And the Men's Aid report details that 94% of contacts from men disclose the perpetrator is female, with 6% of engagement from men disclosing that the perpetrator is another man or indeed a family member. I noted there at the outset that Minister for Justice Helen McEntee was at your launch event yesterday. That's a welcome thing, I'm sure, to see that kind of support from government. And hopefully you'll see that now again going forward.
Absolutely. Minister Helen McEntee has been terrific in her support to Men's Aid and the wider domestic sexual and gender-based violence stakeholders, the various groups. And absolutely the zero tolerance strategy that she launched earlier this year, our own strategy now for 2022 to 2025, mirrors the ambitious plan that Minister McEntee has set out, and she has also allocated funding for that as well. So we'll be hearing in the weeks ahead the additional funding that we'll be getting for 2023.
That 37% increase shows that more men are finding the confidence to come forward for the support of Men's Aid. Do you think we're breaking down those barriers around stigma that men can't come forward or shouldn't come forward or are seen as weak if they are, you know, subject to abuse from a woman?
From them, absolutely. I think men are starting to talk about it in terms of, I suppose, there was a lot of fear, a lot of stigma, a lot of shame. I suppose those stereotypes, you know what I mean, minimising it, that it's always a man on a woman. So what's important, I suppose, and especially with the key stakeholders who were in the room yesterday at the launch, it shows the amount of support, and I hope the men saw it on the news last night as well, so that they can see the amount of support that there is. Because we all understand that it happens to all genders. It can happen to anybody. It is happening to everybody or anybody, and that everybody deserves supports, so regardless of their gender. So I definitely think that 37% is an indication that the men are coming forward, which is really, it's a positive. It is a positive.
Finally then, Katrina, if we discuss it from a Men's Aid point of view and yourselves as an organisation, we've been speaking to you quite regularly over the last number of years, which is great. I think you're doing fantastic work. But ultimately, what's the plan now for the next year? Because those 630 calls that were missed by Men's Aid, you referenced that there, something that you will be hoping to address and maybe urging more people to maybe volunteer or get involved with yourselves?
First and foremost, absolutely, it's funding. It's funding. So at the launch yesterday, I mentioned to everyone in the room, I called it my our Dear Santa letter. And the fund is our funding request for our 1-800 number and the software, etc., to accompany that. Because the telephone system that we have there at the moment is not fit for purpose, because no doubt if we're going to support 10,000 contacts this year and the years ahead, and then in line with the Garda Síochána Cóin, is the thematic report that came out in September, they've also indicated that this area is going to grow, unfortunately and unfortunately. So the audience yesterday certainly heard our funding call yesterday. For our team, absolutely, it's about building the team and having people there to answer the phone, and also for one-to-one support, court support, etc. And that all comes down to resources and building the team. There's only three of us full-time own, and the rest of the eight members are part-time. So again, that comes back to funding for that we very much need full-time members, and I'm very hopeful that will be happening in the coming months.
You're based at the St Anne's Resource Centre in Navan in County Meath on Railway Street there. You can get more information on mensaid.ie, and just remind us of that helpline number again, Katrina.
Sure, it's 01554 3811. 01554 3811.
Great stuff. And that is the annual report from Men's Aid. If you want to read more, you can get it on that website that I mentioned there, mensaid.ie, reporting a 37% increase in demand to its domestic abuse support services. The helpline successfully dealt with 6,690 calls, unfortunately missing 630 calls, 522 counselling appointments, 244 court support appointments in Dolphin House, Dublin Family Law Courts, 105 outreach appointments or one-to-one in-person appointments, and 43% of the calls came from the Dublin region, followed by the North East, then Galway and the West of Ireland. And that helpline number again is 01554 3811. And Katrina Bentley is Chief Executive of Men's Aid. Thanks, Katrina.